welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are going through the Constitution. And as I always say, it is now or never. We are rapidly coming to that precipice, or actually just about ready to cross over the precipice. Now, I was poked in the eye not too long ago by a gentleman that says, you know, you said it was already over. We're already past that point. And I go, I don't think I've ever said that. I don't think I'm ever on the record for saying that. But folks, it's just a matter of time. And as a matter of fact, the most important part of this message is to ensure that your state legislators know that they have the ultimate say over the Constitution, not the Supreme Court, not Congress, not the president. So when they come along and say, we have to put aside the Constitution to save, you know, America, to save the world, or whatever kind of crappy excuse they're going to come up with, they don't have the authority. All the states have to do is push back and say, sorry, you can't do that. It's our Constitution. We're the parties to it. You are not. Republic Review would be great at that point to initiate and dismantle this unconstitutional Leviathan and put every little vestige of the federal government back into full compliance and back within the framework of the Constitution. Now, in the last episode, I painstakingly went through the importance of enlightenment in our society. And it goes hand in hand. It dovetails with natural law. Now, when we looked at what the framers had done, and actually it wasn't just the framers, how this nation was building upon enlightenment, Western society enlightenment, we took a path that Europe was not able to do. And that was because Europe had already been spoiled and perverted by theocracies. Every state in Europe was a theocracy. Now, you've heard me say that every state in the United States was kind of a theocracy. There was a symbiotic relationship between a single church, an established church, and the state government. I'm not going to get into all of this. We're going to get into the Constitution today. But on these feedback Fridays and so forth, what we want to do is we want to make sure that you kind of understand these principles that I don't get a chance to go through that much, so that you kind of understand why, you know, these things were important. They were good, but they weren't really good. And there were better ways and better things we could be doing, because bottom line, even Madison in his Remonstrance on Religion pointed out that having a monopoly and having a state-based church was not good. Now, he acknowledged the fact that the church had an integral role in society. And that role, as a matter of fact, he points this out in his cod fishery debates, on the cod fishery bounty debates up in Congress in 1792, that we didn't want to have the federal government or any government working in compassionate services. That was always best to be left for churches and the community, not government. And when you start creating these ties, you have to be very, very careful. I went through, I'll just say, not a drilling or a grilling, but with a good new friend in Virginia that's, you know, kind of working through these things. We were talking about how these things were critical and important in restoring the role that the churches and the communities should have regarding compassionate services. And we kind of talked about how to go through it and go into those things. But to be honest with you folks, we really need to get through the Constitution. So maybe we'll bring these types of things up on Feedback Friday. If you've got questions, if you've got concerns, let me know. And we will bring them up on Feedback Friday. Better yet, just call me. call us on our, you know, open line, you know, which is basically your our complaints, bitches, moans, and groans. And by all means, it's 425-270-5416. And as you know, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that goes through the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. Unlike all of the entertainment that you listen to, this show is not here to entertain you. We are here to enlighten you, educate you, and empower you. And by these, you know, these educational shows and this educational content, it should also invigorate you so that you really understand which way to swing to knock out this beast that we're fighting. As Henry David Thoreau, I believe that's his name, came out and, you know, eloquently stated, and I'm just paraphrasing here. He said that thousands strike at the root, or thousands strike at the branches of evil when it comes to fighting government. But only one strikes at the root. The question is, who's striking at the root? I can tell you right now, if we continue to listen to the entertainers that are, you know, filling our heads with their gee whiz books and their gee whiz stuff, and don't let your little head be worried or bothered. Or, you know, these people that aggrandize themselves. When you listen to conservative talk show hosts, I'm telling you, they're not offering you any hope. They are basically trying to get you. Most of these guys are supporting the convention of states. Now, again, before I get into Article 2, because that's where we're diving into today, because we just left Article 1 in our last episode covering the Constitution. I mean, these nimrods, these idiots, are telling you that their only mechanism in fighting government overreach is that's in the Constitution is the Article 5 Convention. What a bunch of... Are you kidding me? That is babble. And that is, you know, it's almost like juvenile. Folks, I ask you to read the First Amendment. It tells you right there what we're supposed to do if government isn't doing the right thing. It is called the petition for our right to petition government for the redress of grievances. That's what we're supposed to be doing. And these people want to jump straight into a constitutional convention. They don't want to actually have an open and honest dialogue and an open and honest conversation regarding what the problems are. Oh, well, no, let's just give us a blank check so that we can go write a constitution. Mark Levin, Glenn Beck, and everybody else that's out there supporting this, they're not your friends. Either that, or they've been duped and they owe you a big apology. Anybody, I remember when Mark Levin was completely against the Convention of States, and then all of a sudden he became a big advocate right after he wrote his book, The Liberty Amendments. All he wants to do is he wants to be able to urinate on the Constitution, like a dog, make his mark. That's all he wants. He wants to be able to live in infamy as one of the guys that perverted the Constitution and its concepts. Because based on what I see and what he's written, I don't see him understanding the true essence of the Constitution. And it's a very simple essence, folks. We're going through it now. And so anyway... Without any further ado, let's dive into Article 2. And so, actually, Article 2, there's this thing called the Electoral College, and it's covered right here in Section 1. So we're really going to dive into the Electoral College today. And this will drive some petitions. We've already gotten one petition out there, but what we need to do is we need to probably write a petition against very specific things that we want to do. And as a matter of fact, what I will do is I'm going to pull up the Bill of Rights to kind of go through this, because we have some petitions regarding the Electoral College. And so what we want to do is actually, you know, help you kind of connect the dots and understanding what kind of petitions that we're doing. Because right now we've got, I think, 19, almost 20 petitions in just going through the Constitution. I'm not counting the other 85 big problems that we have to face that are worthy of petitions. And again, 85 is just a basic number. There's a lot more than that, folks. There is a lot more than that. And when we look at what Martin Luther did with 95 complaints or 95 petitions or theses against the Catholic Church, well, you know, he was kind of coming up with a comprehensive list. I haven't even come up with a comprehensive list yet, but I can tell you it's well over 100. And so when we're done with all of this, we'll probably be in the couple hundreds. It's that bad. And we've been lulled into accepting, you know, oh, well, the Republican Party is going to fix this. Not in your lifetime, especially the National Republican Party. And the presidents that they're handing you are not your friend. As a matter of fact, the primary is the pruning process so that they can make sure that they have a level of control over whoever's going to become president. That is the power of our party form of government today, which is an absolute violation of the Constitution. The party should have no controls over our politics, especially over our government. But it does, and we've got to fix that. So when we come back from the break, we will dive into Article 2, Section 1 of the Constitution. I almost said Article 1. Anyway, I didn't, and I'm proud of myself. So we will be back, and I'm just kidding, of course. We'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me kind of back up a little bit, because one of the things that we covered in Article 1 that I didn't really help you get your arms around, because one of the first things that happens in Article 1, 2, and 3, it lays out our form of government, the structure of our government. Now, in America, we have been so perverted in what our government is that, like I said, it's a party form of government, and it is not a government that is designed on, you know, the principles, or I should say even the framework of, you know, of the Constitution or what the framers had instituted in the Constitution. So when we look at Article 1, the very first thing Article 1 states, and let me go right back up to Article 1. Article 1 says this: all legislative powers herein granted shall be vested in a Congress of the United States. Now, what do you think Article 2 is going to start off with? Any suggestions, any ideas? Well, it's going to have something about the executive and where those powers are. And it says right here, the executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. What do you think section or Article 3 is going to tell you? The judicial power of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court. Now, here it is, folks. We have just laid out the framework of government in America: a legislative, a executive, and a judiciary. So when they created the state governments, did they just have a executive that was the chief magistrate? Now remember, in England, the sheriff was the magistrate. And as a matter of fact, the way the monarchies were very maniacal in moving away from land barons and creating counts and then in establishing sheriffs, because what they did was they kind of brought in most of the land barons that were friendly, that weren't really hostile. And they may have brought them all in, but over time, they, you know, took control of who these land barons were and how they were serving the kingdom. And so I'm just telling you, that's what power does, and power corrupts. Remember, the land barons were so upset, you know, back in 1215, when they revolted against King John. I mean, King John ended up signing the Magna Carta kind of to save his skin in a way. And I don't believe King John would have done that had he not been forced by the sword to do it, right? I mean, that's what it takes. If we're going to pull back government's tyranny, we have to use some level of force. I am here to tell you that based on the design of our Constitution, anybody that tells you, because, you know, I see these little memes, I see these little, you know, phrases that the day we lose the Second Amendment is the day the Second Revolution will start. I'm telling you, folks, that kind of crap is idiocy, because they don't understand what we have in the Constitution. And how many people out there supporting the Second Amendment has used First Amendment petitions? Not one. They'd just rather go and cap off some things. I mean, seriously, they just want to, you know, be able to fight a war. And that's not our civil government. That's not how we've been designed. And so we start looking at how we created the states, or actually how the states were changed, because every single state, not one state was designed in this three-headed form. Not one. So when the Constitution was ratified, every state converted into this three-headed form, into a distinct governor, into a bicameral legislative body of legislators to represent the counties and the people of the county, and a separate judiciary. And so they actually moved all of these into, and I honestly think that when we really look at it, because the judiciary kind of has a dual role. They have this, you know, so the executive does enforcement. They go out and they catch people breaking the law, and then they hand them over to the judiciary. And then the judiciary basically tries them, and if you're guilty, they throw them into jail. However, the judiciary kind of throws that back over to the executive to basically keep them in jail. Now, I don't believe that that's the best way to do it. I believe that maybe our penal system should actually be a separate branch to where, you know, Congress would actually dictate how that is to be done. And not that it can't be done under the executive, but I just don't believe that those people out enforcing the laws are necessarily the best to make those decisions. I mean, in some ways, this goes down to our criminal law reform and looking at how we can, you know, move America to a position where crime becomes just the least desirable thing for any human being. I mean, isn't that the desire of all of us? Do we not want to actually see America crime-free, where nobody commits crime? Can we do that? Is that pie in the sky? Well, if we look at the way it's been going, it's almost like, you know, this crime serves a purpose. And technically, in the party form of government that we have, it does. As a matter of fact, it is used to create fear. It is used to, you know, manipulate the masses and the voters to vote a specific. It's the same thing with this invasion on our southern border. Crime has been manipulated and actually supported by our government. It's the same thing with this invasion is being supported by our government. So we need to actually start separating these things. And so I'm not sure if even maybe the federal government should do this. I'm not the king, and I don't want to be the king, but I do want to basically put things on the table so that everybody can look at it and go, you know what, that makes it, you're making a good point. We need to make these, you know, we need to have these conversations so we can make the best decisions. And I believe that that's what the framers were doing. That's exactly what the framers did. They threw out all these problems, and they were able to come up with the best solution in, you know, how to form a government and how to move forward. Now, they didn't live in a time where, you know, there was this tie and this corruption in government to basically feed upon and actually have a need for criminal behavior. Why do you think the Democrats, you know, want to have a, you know, all this gun control so that they could have more gun violence and justify more gun control, more tyranny? Are you starting to see this? So anyway, let's go back to Article 2. What I wanted to just prove to you as we were getting into Article 2 is they lay out the very first line in each article, 1, 2, and 3, they lay out where the powers are vested, you know, are vested. In other words, legislation and creation of law is in Congress and Congress alone. So this, that means the Supreme Court can't do it. And judiciary is deciding whether the contract is being complied to or not, or whether something is in the contract, the Constitution, that's for the judiciary. And they're supposed to be the guardians of the compact. That's the one little thing they're supposed to be doing for the states, is to ensure that the Constitution is fully complied to. And they're not doing it. They haven't been doing it. And even in the Roe v. Wade overturning, they basically made sure that they, you know, lifted their leg on it like a dog and said, you know what, we still reserve the right to give you tyrannical law. Because they basically said, don't construe that the fact that this is a state issue, all other things are state issues. We will tell you when they're state issues or not. And they can't do that. Anyway, so back to Article 2. The executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. Now, I'm telling you right now, that is being actually undermined, and that's being violated. So how is this being undermined and violated? Well, so when we look at the powers and responsibilities underneath the president, didn't Pelosi do a whirlwind tour and go in and visit Taiwan? She had no business doing that. She has lawmaking power. She does not have foreign aid, and she should not have been. Well, it's like putting the Supreme Court on a whirlwind tour to go around and say, we're going to bring you justice. No, that responsibility is an executive responsibility. And so just letting you know that the executive responsibility, all of these lines are being blurred by all three branches. And it says, he shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the vice president chosen for the same time, be elected as follows. Now, hold on here. Did you hear what this said? The executive power shall be vested in a president of the United States of America. He shall hold his office during the term of 4 years, and together with the vice president chosen for the same time or for the same term, be elected as follows. So just to be clear here, is the Constitution sexist? Because they're saying he, only a man could be the president? Are you catching this? Where's the woke? Okay, so do we need to amend the Constitution? I think not, because we've actually gotten beyond that to say, you know, any person, any U.S. citizen that meets the criteria, they go through the criteria, being naturally born and so forth, can become president. But anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so first off, let me pull something back for you, because Congress is looking to try to create laws in governing and dictating elections. However, they do not have the constitutional role, responsibility, or power over elections to determine how we're to vote and to determine the manner and so forth. As a matter of fact, the federal government's role, the only thing that's consistent with elections is, and it's throughout the Constitution, we go through the amendments, you'll notice that the only thing that they can talk about as far as people in voting is that only U.S. citizens can vote. Only U.S. citizens. Now, they do have some authority, and let me bump up back up to this. Let me try to find it. So this is in, let me see here, Article 1, Section 4. The times and places and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But, so right here is the only control over elections that Congress has the constitutional authority for. So if they start getting involved in anything other than these very few parameters, then they're violating the Constitution with this new law. And so this is what they have. The Congress may at times, by law, make or alter such regulations, except as to the places. So the regulations that they talk about is the times, places, and manner of holding elections, not the process of the voting, not the process of counting, but the time, places, and manner. Got it? So those are the only laws or regulations that they can inject from time to time. So this new law, if they come out and say, we're going to have a national voting system, oh, that's not included. They don't have the authority to dictate to all of the states what they have to use or what they're supposed to use. That would be a huge usurpation of states' rights and the responsibilities left to the states to be able to perform their own elections. Because really, if you think about it, the majority of the elections that occur on any given election day is for local government, which is why it was always left to the states. But anyway, let me jump back to Article 2, Section 1. Now, this is what the Constitution states on the selection or the manner of selecting the president and the vice president. And oh, by the way, what I just read regarding the elections of, that's only applicable to representatives and senators. States, that's only on the federal election side. What I'm going to read you are the parameters, the roles and responsibilities between the states and the federal government of what the federal government can intervene or be involved in. But to be clear, they have even less control over the presidential election because the president is the president of the states. And the people of the states, because that's why we have electors, not popular vote. It's the president is not the president of the people, because it's a representative form of government, right? So we're supposed to choose an elector, and the elector is the one that will cast the vote based on who they feel is, you know, best for president. And we're supposed to basically go through the electors and say, who are you going to vote for? Who are you going to? And what we've done is we've completely violated the Constitution by allowing the parties to completely pervert it. We'll get into that. Okay, so each state shall appoint, and this is for the presidential election, which Congress cannot meddle in these things. And actually, I'll jump down to the very end of this, because this is what Congress can do regarding the Electoral College. The Congress may determine the time of choosing the electors and the day on which they shall give their votes, which day shall be the same throughout the United States. That's the only thing Congress can do regarding the Electoral College and the votes. That's it. Do you understand what that was? Do you understand what that just stated? That was very clear, that Congress cannot determine the manner in how we choose our electors. They cannot, you know, tell us the whole process of whittling down or how the electors can vote. They can only determine the time of choosing the electors. In other words, what day are we going to have this election for our electors? They can determine that. And the day on which the electors shall basically meet in each state to cast their votes. But that's it. Nowhere in there can they dictate who can dictate who the electors are. As a matter of fact, not even your state legislatures can do this. This is why going through this is so important. So each state, this is what the state legislature's authority is. Each state shall appoint in such manner as the legislatures may direct a number of electors equal to the whole number of senators and representatives to which the state may be entitled in the Congress. But no senator or representative or person holding an office of trust or profit under the United States shall be appointed an elector. Now, the prerequisites for an elector is that they have to meet the same standards as a person to be elected to Congress, or I should say the House of Representatives. So in other words, an elector must be 25 years of age, and they must be a citizen for 7 years. And I'm just telling you, right now, you can go through several different state elections of the presidents, how the parties have done this, and they have walked somebody from just becoming a citizen, you know, in the Democratic Party to allowing that person to become an elector. That is a violation. You can't do that. They have to be a citizen for 7 years. Do you see my point? So we, if you understood the Electoral College, now you can actually start going after how the federal government and your state government has perverted this entire process. Because I'm telling you, if we followed this process, Biden would not have been elected. Biden would not have been elected, period. And so each elector shall meet. Okay, so this is what happens now. Now that they've been able to go through this, now this is the process when the electors meet in the state capitol. Each elector shall meet in their respective states and vote by ballot for president and vice president, one of whom at least shall not be an inhabitant of the same state with themselves. So in other words, each elector will be able to vote for a president and a vice president. And actually, they'll even get into this. Let me just keep on going. They shall name the ballots. They shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in a distinct ballots the person voted for as vice president. In other words, they're to have two separate ballots, or to literally call out specifically, this is my president and this is my vice president. They choose who, each of them choose who they want to see as president and vice president. What I'm telling you, folks, is the Constitution does not allow the parties or the state legislatures to dictate tickets. You have to vote. When you vote for this person, you have to vote for that person. And the reason that they do this is because the parties have assumed full control over your electors. The parties have no constitutional standing, because nowhere in here was it ever delegated to the state legislatures that they could dictate that the parties themselves would be able to choose electors. This isn't tough. You, in a representative form of government, you have a right to vote for your elector. You don't vote for the president of the United States. If the people voted for the president of the United States, then we would have direct elections, which means we would have a democracy. And the Constitution was very clear. It was to be a Republican form of government. So you are to choose who your elector is. Are you okay with less than, you know, a small percentage? How many people, how many people in your county are actually, you know, voting for the electors? Well, it's a very small amount. Go find out how many people are active as Republican Party members. Go look and find out how many people are active as Democratic members. You're going to probably find that that doesn't even make 10% of your county population. Not even 10% for both parties. And both parties are choosing who you're, how is that representative of you and the people in your county or in the congressional district? Do you see my point? This is a huge, we've had our entire process stolen from us, and this is why GRs keeps on telling you that we have a party form of government, not a Republican form of government, because you should be able to vote for your elector and whoever, the, you know, in your congressional district you decide, then that becomes the solid, confirmed, and elector for you. We're going to go through here, and you're going to find that there's nowhere where the state legislature has the authority to say winner take all. They don't have that authority. So when we come back after the break, we're going to rip through some more of this, and I want you to listen for some of these things that we've kind of been, you know, haunted over regarding the Electoral College. This is tickets. such as who's actually getting to vote and choose who these electors by name are. It should be we the people, not the parties. And it's the same thing with winner take all. So those three things, we'll be right back after these two messages. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me get back to exactly what the language is, and I'll do a little backtracking. So let's back up to, they shall name in their ballots the person voted for as president, and in distinct ballots, plural, the person voted for as vice president, and the number of votes for each, which lists, they shall sign and certify and transmit sealed to the seat of government of the United States, directed to the president of the Senate. The president of the Senate shall, in the presence of the Senate and House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the votes shall then be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. In other words, you're going to have a pile of votes that are for president and a pile of votes for vice president, and you're going to count those votes. And you're going to verify that the greatest number between all 50 states that just came in, all 50 states and only 50 states, Puerto Rico can't vote. None of these, Washington, D.C. can't vote. They cannot have electors, nor can they be a state. As a matter of fact, it is clear in Article 1 that Washington, D.C. shall be the seat of government, and it cannot become a state. Anyhow, the president of the Senate shall, in his presence of the Senate and the House of Representatives, open all the certificates, and the vote shall be counted. The person having the greatest number of votes for president shall be the president. If such number be a majority of the whole number of electors appointed, and if no person have such majority, then from the persons having the highest numbers, not exceeding three on the list of those voted for as president, the House of Representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the votes shall be taken by states. Okay, so what happened is, if all of a sudden they don't have a clear majority, then they can reach down to the three top three people for votes, the top three that got votes, but not one of them had the majority. And so they not more than three. So they should take the top three, and then it would go to Congress, to the House of Representatives, and they shall vote for those three. And whoever, and as a matter of fact, it is done by delegates here. In other words, there's however many 300 or 400 seats in the House of Representatives, 435 some, I believe. Anyway, you won't have a total of 435 votes. You'll have a total of 50 votes, because that's why they said that representatives shall choose immediately by ballot the president. But in choosing the president, the vote shall be taken by states, the representation from each state having one vote. In other words, they vote by delegation. A quorum for this purpose shall consist of a member or members from 2/3 of the states, and a majority of all the states shall be necessary to a choice. Now, the way it is today, folks, is that when they receive the votes, everybody is there. Everybody that was just elected to Congress is now sitting in the Capitol while the president is going through the president of the Senate is going through this. So we don't have to worry about quorum or anything else, because it is mandated that they be there. If at the time fixed for beginning of the term of the president shall have died, the vice president. So this is why, if you don't have a clear president, folks, if there's not a clear presence by the majority, it goes into the 12th Amendment, and they are to choose out of the top three. It's that simple. But they're to choose based on the electors. You know, if we look at this whole process, because nowhere so far, because when we went into break, I said that there were three issues that you needed to determine. Who the electors were to vote and how they were to vote. Is there anywhere that it tells us that they have to vote by ticket? No. Is there anywhere where the state had the ability or the authority to say, well, if we have, 15 electors and 8 vote for, the Democratic Party and 7 vote for the Republican, then they all, winner takes all. In other words, they're using a democracy based on the popular vote. They're using a democracy based on how many electors there are. There is no way that is constitutional, and actually that's unconstitutional, because if you in your congressional district voted for a specific elector, that elector is your representative. What I mean by this, folks, is that elector cannot be taken from you. It's repugnant to a Republican form of government that we'd have electors actually taken from us. So anyway, back to, this process. If at the time fixed for the beginning of the term of president, the president-elect shall have died, the vice president shall become president. If a president shall not have been chosen before the time fixed for the beginning of his term, or if the president-elect shall have failed to qualify. Okay, so when does the president have to be qualified? Well, apparently qualifications should be set well before the election. But at least that there has, if there's a question like citizenship or what have you, then that actually has to take place before that president can be seated. And if there is a question, I'm telling you, if by law a woman comes in, or a person, doesn't matter, if a male or female comes in and says that they were sexually molested, they were sexually harassed, or what have you, by law, you are to investigate. If you bury that, you don't do anything with that, and come to find out, that person actually goes and decides to sue the business, you will be liable. The business can actually turn on you and say, you were supposed to actually investigate. You don't have the authority to not investigate. And that needs to be the same premise regarding any questions of citizenship or any other qualifications for a person becoming president or any political office. As a matter of fact, when we get into Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, the questions must be, has this person that were just voted for president, did they violate Section 3? Are they banned or should they be banned? I mean, we really need to actually, this is why driving these petitions and demanding the people have the power to execute Section 3 or the power to remove their public servants, not by recall, not by, you know, the, you know, due process or impeachment. We have in the Constitution the authority to remove them for violating their oath of office, period. No due process is entitled and no impeachment required. As a matter of fact, I have no idea why impeachment processes are there other than for possibly other bad behavior like drunken driving or something like that. I get that. But more importantly, when it comes to the Constitution and they violate their oath, it's done. We should be able to remove them and people need to be empowered to do that. Back to Article 2 and the selection or the Electoral College. If the president shall have failed to qualify, then the vice president-elect shall act as president until a president shall have qualified, and the Congress may, by law, provide for the case wherein neither a president-elect nor a vice president shall have qualified, declaring who shall then act as president, or the manner in which one who is to act shall be selected, and such person shall act accordingly until a president or vice president shall have qualified. So there's a lot of language in here for the importance of qualifying as president. I mean, you know, everybody, oh, well, yeah, they were happy at the state level. I'm sorry. There should be very rigorous qualification standards that have to be proven before a president can be, you know, seated. And so that's the whole point. Even though he may be chosen, that does not give him the right to become, they still have to be qualified according to the Constitution. So in other words, the process that doesn't even exist is the qualification of the president after the choosing of the president. In other words, on January 6th, let's just say President Trump was chosen the way he was supposed to be. Because he was president already, and one would presume that he was already qualified. In other words, he met all the criteria for being president. Now, let's just say somebody else became president for the first time, like Michelle Bachmann. Now, if Michelle Bachmann was chosen by the electors to become president, or let's say she wasn't, let's say the electors couldn't come with a clear, you know, majority or clear win. And see, the reason the parties went down this process was they guaranteed that it wouldn't go to Congress. Anyway, let's say, real quick, let's say Michelle Bachmann has been chosen. She then has to be verified that she is qualified. That has to be a formal process. And the people don't even see this. Nobody sees this happening because Congress doesn't care. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. We'll wrap this up in our next episode.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.